Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Logan Weldy is here with us today. He's from the Clean Air Council. And we're going to chat about Philadelphia, the air here in Philadelphia. So what's it like here? How do we rate, you know, large cities in America? How do we rate as far as, you know, our air quality?
Sure. As you said, my name is Logan Weldy, and I am a staff attorney at Clean Air Council. I've been at the council since 2012, and the council has been the council since 67. It was part of the, I believe, the American Lung Association before that, and then became itself after. So we just celebrated our 50th anniversary a couple of years ago, and we are one of the preeminent environmental organizations in Pennsylvania. We have about 40,000 members and activists. So we do a whole range of activities. I do litigation, lobbying, and legislation. We have lawyers. We have community activists. We have people that work on trails. So we're a very wide-ranging organization. And you asked about Philadelphia specifically.
Yeah.
Philadelphia's generally got very bad air quality. Actually, we were talking on the way over, and we are ranked the 12th worst in the country, which is pretty depressing and sobering when you see how much industry is out there.
12th worst in like how, you know, is that out of 100? Is that out of 50? What is a 12th worst?
So that's the whole country. That would be, so California has, I think, the top five spots. Pittsburgh is number 8. So Pittsburgh and Lancaster are number 8.
I see what you're saying. I was confused. Okay.
Yeah. And then the Philadelphia region, including Camden, ranks 12th worst in the country.
Okay. What can we do? What can we do to help out?
Yeah. So there are a lot of reasons why we have bad air quality. One of them, Pennsylvania is one of the largest generators of electricity. Our energy sector is one of the largest in the country. I think we would rank 6th, if I'm not wrong, in energy output. So we export about 20% of our energy. So all of that energy that we produce, the energy sector just in 2017 was overtaken by the transportation sector as the worst air polluter out of all of the sectors. So you have things like agriculture, commercial and residential businesses, residential and then commercial businesses. So transportation right now is the worst, and dense cities are generally going to have bad air quality, mostly from transportation. Now we've been phasing out a lot of the lower grade oils that we used to heat our buildings with. There are still a large amount of old oil burning buildings in Philadelphia, but we have over the past couple of decades been transitioning away from that. We are now using a lot of fracked gas, so methane gas from PGW for Philadelphia's homes to heat and cool, I guess, and then and to cook. And so what can we do? So our transportation sector, as I mentioned, is one of the worst. Philadelphia is fairly unique. There are a lot of cities that do have idling laws. And so idling is basically when you sit in your vehicle without using the vehicle. And I know.
I've got a little story.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'd love to hear it.
Almost every day, I live in the city. Almost every day when I go out to my car, I park on the street. I get a parking spot wherever I can find one on the street. Mm-hmm. And as I'm walking to my car, I will see someone get into their car, sit down in the car, start the car, and then pull out their cell phone and, you know, make plans for the day, you know, whether it's, you know, texting someone right before they leave or you know, check the weather or whatever it is. But the car is running mm-hmm. the entire time while they're checking their phone.
Yeah.
And I guess, would it help if people got into their car, checked their phone, and then started right before they left the parking spot. You know, does that help? You mentioned energy being the big culprit of the air pollution. Do cars play a big part in that then? Go ahead.
Yeah. So your story is every single day. I live also in Philadelphia, and in the morning I bike to work, so I'll often ride. Just this morning, our office is at 19th and Walnut, and just coming down Sansom Street, I passed probably 15 vehicles where the people Sansom Street is a big spot for people just to utility trucks, things like that.
Yeah, and parking garages, just one right garages, after the other.
Yeah. So I saw at least 15 people this morning with their engines on, just sitting in their vehicles, looking at their phones and typing up or, you know, texting. And you're really onto something. There has been this big thing where people get in their cars, they turn them on, and they just sit and look at their phones for a long period of time. So I think it is interesting that the ubiquity of phones now has created probably worse air pollution in Philadelphia just from that. So it is a little scary. So yeah, idling is one of the reasons why I went to law school was because I was so frustrated. I was living in New York City and I was so frustrated with idling vehicles and plastic pollution. So these two things just started to really gnaw at me. And I said, what can I do about it? And I said, listen, I've got to go do something about it, and law school was the best thing. So, interesting, New York City now has a program where a citizen can file a complaint and receive 25% of the ticket from idling vehicles in New York. So I've actually gone up and done a couple of them, and I am waiting. I haven't filed them yet with the department, but I'm going to file those and see how it goes. And I'm really hoping that Philadelphia can take that on. So I would ask city council members to look at this. There is air management services in Philadelphia are supposed to handle vehicles that are greater than 8,000 pounds. And then PPA is supposed, and the police are supposed to handle all others, but they can also write tickets for 8,000 pounds or more. We recently, a couple of years ago, filed a request to get the information on idling, and the tickets that they, guess how many tickets they issued per year?
100.
Yeah, so it was like 50.
Okay.
So you're right on the money.
Yeah.
And every day there are
no one's enforcing this.
So I think one of the simplest things that we could do to get better air quality in Philadelphia is just to turn your engines off. So and most people think, and they're under the false impression, and we had spoken earlier about myths of air pollution. I think it's one of the biggest myths that I hear day in and day out from people who are idling their vehicles is that, hey, you know, I'm just going to do a quick errand. I'm going to run and I'm going to leave my car running, and it's better for my fuel efficiency if I leave the vehicle running. So if I were to tell you that if you're at a stop and you stop for more than X amount of time, what is it? Where is that more fuel efficient to turn the vehicle off? What do you think?
Over, 5 seconds, three,
Yeah, your answer is better than 99% of the people. Most people say a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes. It's actually about 10 to 12 seconds. So if you sit in your vehicle for more than about 10 seconds, you've wasted more fuel than if you had turned the vehicle off and back on again. So I
didn't know that.
Yeah. Sometimes if I'm at a long light, I'll even turn my engine off. I'm probably a bit more neurotic about it than most, though.
So let me tell you another story.
Uh-huh.
I've worked in Center City, very close to where there are many tours of the Liberty Bell or Independence Hall. Buses will pull up and let people off to see, the sights. And for some reason, diesel trucks and buses, I don't know why, but they want to idle. They want to leave it idling. And I can't understand a reason for that. But they'll usually leave it on while people are going to visit their sites, and then the people come back and it's still running, and it's been running the entire time. Mm-hmm. I had heard that there was an idling law here in Philadelphia. More than 3 minutes or more than 5 minutes is it that you have to have your engine turned off, no matter what type of vehicle you have. Is that true? Is there something like that?
Right. So in Philadelphia, so in Pennsylvania, there are two laws that deal with, one directly deals with idling, one indirectly deals with idling. And in Philadelphia, there are two laws. So in Philadelphia, because Philadelphia also has to take on the Pennsylvania laws, so there are essentially four laws that deal with idling in Philadelphia. The two Pennsylvania laws are, one is the Diesel Motor Vehicle Act, which makes it illegal for any vehicle that's greater than 5 tons to idle for more than 5 minutes. So 5 tons, okay. 5 minutes. The second Pennsylvania law makes it illegal for you to get out of your vehicle with the engine engaged. So you need to disengage the engine, which means turn the key to mm-hmm. off and take the key out of the vehicle. So it's actually illegal to get out of your vehicle with the engine running in Pennsylvania. I bet 90% of people in this state don't know that. And then so the two Philadelphia laws, one of them deals with vehicles greater than 8,000 pounds, and one of them deals with vehicles less than 8,000 pounds. There is a 3-minute idling law for vehicles less than 8,000 pounds, and it's 0 minutes for any vehicles greater than 8,000 pounds if they're at a layover. So layover is not really defined, but I would say those buses are at a layover when they stop and discharge their passengers. Mm-hmm. When those buses are just sitting there, they have 0 minutes of idling, technically, under okay. the air management regulation in Philadelphia. So there are some exemptions. It's 2 minutes if you're doing some other things, but generally it's just a matter of minutes or no time at all that you're allowed to idle in Philadelphia. Okay. And we actually created, because it was such a big source of air pollution, the Clean Air Council created an app, and it's idlefreephilly.org. And if you go there, you can see, we put together a map of all the idling reports that we've received, and we have about maybe 2,800 idling reports, and you can see where the hot spots are in Philadelphia for idling, how long the vehicle's been there, what type of vehicle it is. There's pictures, so it's a cool app that we've been using for a number of years now. We've worked with some of the agencies in Philadelphia to try and reduce the agencies. So Philadelphia Fleet has about 6,000 vehicles. We calculated they spend about $3 million a year on idling. So we could cut out all of the air pollution in Philadelphia from the city vehicle fleet and save the city millions of dollars a year if we just got the drivers to simply turn their vehicles off.
Yeah. Not only vehicles for, people that are touring, but also vehicles that are on the street doing construction, mm-hmm. Road construction.
Right.
I'll pass by. Again, walking to my car to get to work, vehicles, forklifts or backhoes that are in the middle of the street doing street work, and they're just running their vehicle while they're looking at their phone and waiting for their boss to show up to, tell them what to do or
right.
whatever the deal is, but leaving the vehicle run.
Yeah. And it's such a simple fix.
Yeah.
It really is. It makes... economic sense, it makes health sense, and the people that are really the most affected are the ones that are sitting in those vehicles, the driver of the bus, the driver of the dump truck, I go up to them and I say, hey, could you mind shutting your engine off? I get kind of a blank look, and then I say, why are you a cop? And then I'll explain it, you're increasing the air pollution in the area, you could turn it off. And by the way, you're the one who's breathing all this in, and they just continue with that blank look, and it just seems to fly over.
There's no cabin filters in those vehicles.
Yeah.
And even if there was, you still get particulate matter.
Yep.
Through those cabin filters.
Yeah.
As well.
You get SO2, NOx, ozone. All of the PM 2.5, PM 10, all of the associated elements of air pollution. You're breathing all of that in.
Okay. So if we're number 12 in the country, what can we do to, you know, put ourselves far down the list? What can we do, you know, immediately, aside from, you know, idling and, you know, shutting the car off or not turning the car on while we're on our phone, mm-hmm. and turning the car on only when we're about to go? What else can we do? What would be a good...
Okay, so if I had my dream list of things, let's say I was the mayor of Philadelphia, what I would do is I would institute a congestion fee in Philadelphia, just like London and some other cities have. I would probably close some of the streets down. I would, so for example, and you've been in Philadelphia, I assume, for a fairly long period of time?
Yeah, 20 some years.
Okay, right. So you've seen a lot of the trolley tracks have been, you know, almost all of our streets in Philadelphia actually have trolley tracks underneath them.
Underneath the pavement.
Yeah. And so I think one really creative solution that we could come up with is let's just take 7th Street and 6th Street. So they one runs north, one runs south. You would dig up the trolley tracks, take the remaining portion, so the trolley tracks go down the center of the road, take one side of those trolley tracks and just have it be green gardened areas and pedestrian walkways, so increase the sidewalks on one side, and then on the other side have a two-lane bike lane going up and down both 7th and 6th Street, and then you could do, like, every 6 or 7 blocks, you could do something like that and encourage people, so you would have free public transit on those streets. You'd have pedestrian walking, you'd have biking. It would just really clean the whole area. You would cool down the area. The more vegetation that you put in cities, the cooler, the heat island effect that you get, mm-hmm. from having the concrete and the lack of vegetation. So it would help that whole area. The citizens and the Philadelphia citizens would just benefit from having a nice walkable, long thoroughfare through Philadelphia. So that I would do congestion fee. I would do break out some of the roads and have them be free public transit and just biking and walking on them. I would also ban all diesel vehicles. Diesel vehicles have a very high particulate matter. So they diesel vehicles are very pollutive, and they're very bad for people's health.
I think a lot of people think it was the opposite. That diesel fuel was actually better than
regular gasoline.
Gasoline.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I think a lot of people thought that. Now there are, I think, 6 countries. There are a number of cities, and I know, like, Paris, London, and a few others that are banning diesel vehicles, and they're actually taking it further. And by like 2022 somewhere in the near future, they're banning not only diesel vehicles, and then they're going to take it to ban all gasoline fired vehicles. So it will be they're trying to incentivize electric vehicle adoption, and so they're pointing the marketplace towards electric vehicles. And so banning diesel vehicles and then moving towards getting rid of regular fossil fuel cars.
Cool. Yeah. And electric vehicles will help.
Electric vehicles will help significantly at the emission point. So, and what I mean by emission point is you walking by a vehicle. So a diesel vehicle is very bad. A gasoline vehicle is also very bad, but maybe a little less bad. A propane vehicle or a fracked gas vehicle would be a little bit less. It would be cleaner, but an electric vehicle, there's no actual air emissions to. So the one thing that we also need to consider when we're thinking about electric vehicle adoption is what is the source of the electricity generated?
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. If we're talking about electricity being the biggest polluter, Are we then putting more pollution in the air by creating electric vehicles powered by some sort of electric source? Mm-hmm. And how does that work? If we have an electric car, where's the electric coming from? And is the electric coming from a source that is actually creating more pollution than a gas-powered car?
Yeah. So that is... It's true. I mean, the source of energy that we're getting for our electricity is not clean, and we need to, in unison with adopting electric vehicles, we need to move towards a clean energy grid. And what that means is decarbonizing the grid, and we can do that from there's a number of ways that we can do that. There's been a lot of debate in Pennsylvania and in other states about nuclear energy and subsidizing unprofitable nuclear plants. There are bills that have come up in the Pennsylvania in Harrisburg about that, and none of them have passed. So Three Mile Island is closing down. So we're going to lose a pretty large source of, you know, and I'm doing air quotes, clean energy, just because there's no actual like greenhouse gas emitted by nuclear power plants. So it's good energy, but we also have a very bad side effect, which is the waste produced from it, which is going to be around for, you know, no one knows how long, and what are we going to do with it? But the answer is we need to move towards real renewable energy if we want to really clean. So the transportation grid and the transportation sector, including airplanes, trucks, buses, railroad, and ships, is the largest source of greenhouse gas in America.
Okay.
And the energy sector, all we're going to do if we switch from electric vehicles to gas and diesel vehicles to electric is just shift all of that to the energy sector, which is also very, very dirty. So we're still running a lot of coal plants in Pennsylvania, and those are, you know, the biggest. There's a lot of myth around what's killed coal, and, you know, was there a war on coal in past administrations? The real answer is that the cheap methane gas that Pennsylvania provides by the Marcellus Shale and the Utica and some of the other shale formations in the Northeast, really that was what drove coal out. So,
okay. Fracking, a good thing, a bad thing? Still word out on that? It's not supposed to be good for the environment. Is it better for clean air?
You
probably can't answer on that.
I can answer it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So, okay. The simple one word answer is fracking good thing or bad thing? Bad.
Okay. All right.
So that's the simple answer. And obviously, like everything in life, there's a more nuanced answer. So at the point source of emissions, fracked gas. So it is colloquially called natural gas, but we're really trying to move away from using the term natural gas because that gives this connotation of having this really nice,
a healthy thing.
And methane gas that we use as a fuel source is not a healthy thing. And so you asked a really good set of questions there. When you have a air emission at the source, so let's say you're using fracked gas or gas to cook with or things like that, it is cleaner than other sorts of things that you can cook with, or it's also cleaner than other sorts of things that you could power your vehicle with or other sorts of machinery that needs to be powered by some sort of fuel source. But the real problem with methane and all the fracking that we're doing in Pennsylvania and elsewhere in the country, so you've heard of things like earthquakes in some of the states.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Pennsylvania has, that I know of, we haven't suffered from tremendous amount of earthquakes from that. There might have been small amounts, but I haven't heard much about that. But two real problems that are associated with fracking are the methane leaking, and they leak all along the point sources. So when you pull it up from the ground, so they do what's called the difference between fracked gas and regular gas is that instead of just sticking a straw down into the ground and sucking that gas and oil up, you're sticking this like miles long tube down and you're changing the direction of it. So it's directional drilling. And they send high pressured fracking fluids down into the earth, crack open the mineral deposits that are down there, and then all of the methane gas, they're sucking that out of there. So you're sending millions of gallons of fluids that contain chemicals, and no one knows what those chemicals are because the fracking companies keep those secrets. They don't allow the public to see them under what's called trade secrets, business trade secrets.
Okay.
And even doctors who are treating patients are not allowed to view those things. And if they do view them, if they're allowed to view them, they have to sign confidentiality statements saying, like, we're not going to tell anyone about this. Some of the patients aren't even allowed to view what the chemicals are that they've been interacting with. So it's a dangerous situation. And so you get leakage all along the way. You've got the fluids that then they need to extract those fluids and put them somewhere.
Unknown fluids.
Yeah, unknown fluids they're putting in impound facilities. So you've got contamination of drinking water, you've got air contamination, and, you know, our drinking water is one of the most important sources of life that we have on this planet, and it is being greatly diminished and altered by fracking. So, and I think one important point that I'd really like to make is that we've gotten to the point, there's something called grid parity. So parity of pricing, it means when you put a product, an energy product out there, if you have grid parity, your prices are equivalent to other prices. So renewable energy, solar and wind with battery backup have now achieved grid parity with fracked gas. So
excellent.
Yeah. So,
yes.
So, I guess it begs the question, if we have something that is very clean, renewable, and ultimately once the facility's been built, so once a wind turbine's been built or once the solar array has been installed, those are essentially free energy sources that you're getting, the wind, the sun, and they're not pollutive. They don't put air emissions out. I mean, there are always going to be issues along the line, like where did the minerals and the solar panels come from? They probably came from a mine. They might have come from a conflict region. So there are areas that we need to address when we're talking about renewable energy. Also, it's people always say, well, a wind turbine has, you know, it kills millions of birds and things like that. Well, you know, coal-fired power plants and nuclear power, they kill billions of birds. So so the magnitude of death that comes from so there is impingement and impoundment, I think, are the two terms that are used for all of the power plants need water to cool their facilities.
Right.
So they're sucking in all of this water. They kill billions of creatures that live in the water areas, the water sources that they're getting this from. So there's no easy solution for this, but at this point, because we've reached what's called, you know, grid parity for renewable energy, I think we're going to start seeing these fracking investments that we've made become stranded assets. And stranded assets are going to be paid by the ratepayers like you and me. And so down the road, we're going to be asking the state, why are we continuing to pay for these sources of polluting industries when we can have clean, renewable energy?
Right. And at this point, we can choose our electric sources and choose not to use fracked gas,
mm-hmm.
and choose to use hydro or wind.
Right.
Or solar.
Yeah, there's PA Power Choice, and there's some other places that you can go. And you can go and choose, like you said, you can choose your provider of energy. So the interesting thing is, once I actually have 100% wind-powered at my residence. But once that energy is created, it all goes into a shared, pipe. Let's call it, And that pipe brings all of the energy into Philadelphia, or, you know, they're obviously called transmission lines. They're not pipes, but we'll just say, you know, once it gets into that transmission line, I don't know what I'm getting. So my house is, although I've paid for wind, I'm getting coal. I'm getting the mix that everyone else is getting at their house.
Right.
So just because you buy a product, but what you're doing is you are voting with your dollars.
Right.
You're voting to increase renewable energy, and you're making a smart decision by doing that. It's a responsible thing to do. So, you know, you asked early on in the conversation, what can Philadelphians do? We can adopt better policies of, you know, living in general, and I'll get to that in a second. But you can get an electric vehicle car, and you can choose to change your energy supplier from the default supplier, which is probably PECO's, whatever PECO's getting its energy from, to a clean, renewable source of energy.
I had heard also that Pennsylvania is the largest supplier of wind energy. I had heard that.
Yeah, I don't know where we rank right now. I'm looking at Carson to see if she... I do know that we had a very high supply of wind. I think that some other Midwestern states have overtaken Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And from what I've heard is that they're not doing more wind investments in Pennsylvania because all of the like good spots to put the wind turbines where you're going to get the real high efficiency for your bang for your buck have been taken already. But that's, I don't know if that's true. Carson's shaking her head. We're not in the top 10. Oh, wow. What's
I stand corrected.
Yeah. What's the first? Texas?
North Dakota, Texas, Kansas, South Dakota, and Montana.
I think I said that in order. All right. So, wow, we're not even in the top 10. That's sad. You know.
Okay. New Jersey, Delaware.
How are they doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Delaware is, I believe, so we Clean Air Council was involved in the Exelon merger for Delmarva and for Pepco, which is the New Jersey's supplier of energy in New Jersey. And through the Delmarva merger, we, along with other groups, were able to get a pretty significant amount of money for offshore wind and wind to be built. So there will be more wind going into Delaware. New Jersey has done great with solar. And one of the reasons is, do you know what a REC is? Renewable Energy Credit. So there's an SREC, and there's other blank, you know, letter and then RECs associated with them. But an SREC, Solar Renewable Energy Credit, and New Jersey has just done great with those. They've kept those prices up. So it incentivizes people. It basically pays you to put solar panels on your home and sell that energy back to the grid. So you get...
Nice.
Yeah, so there's something called net metering. Net metering is when your meter goes... backwards. So, you know, you look at your meter in your home, and if you don't have solar panels, it's going forward and you're burning electricity and you're using energy from the grid. When you use net metering, what it does is it takes the amount of energy produced by the solar panels, it takes the amount of energy that you're using, and it nets those out. So if there's a point in the day, which there ultimately will be, where you are producing more energy from your solar panels than you're using, the meter starts spinning backwards, which is really cool. I've seen it. It's cool. There's a podcast that I listened to. The first guy that created net metering, he rigged the system up by himself, and it was a cool story. I don't remember.
Sounds like an Ed Begley thing.
Yeah. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
So one thing. Actually, your question of what Philadelphians can do really is a good question, and it's made me think so much during this conversation. Another thing that something that people don't really ever consider is that all of the items that we're buying and all of the plastic things that we're using and food that we're consuming and, you know, so it's produced.
Mm-hmm.
It's so the factory that it's produced in has air emissions. The energy that factory uses has air emissions. The transportation to get that good to the distributor or the wholesaler uses air emissions, and it destroys our roads, and it does all these things to communities. And the engines often sit and idle. So the trains, if you're ever down on the Schuylkill, you'll notice the trains that are delivering the fracked gas down there, they just sit and idle 24/7 down there. So all of the transportation that we're, when we buy products, there's so much more that goes into it. So you've really got to look when you get a plastic bag from a store and you don't need that plastic bag, you should say to yourself, hey, not only does this plastic bag cost Philadelphia money from pulling it out of the sewage lines and parks and all those things, but it also is a source of air emission. And the utensils that we just, you know, get without even thinking about at the food cart, those utensils are a source of air emissions. Mm-hmm. Not only, as I said, not only producing them and transporting them, but the energy used to do all of that are air emissions. So there's just so many things that Philadelphians can do that are simple things.
Right. Recycling, good thing?
Oh, that's a really, that's a very...
Maybe this is a whole other
recycling
podcast.
Would probably be an hour on itself.
Yes,
let's see.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, for the average person putting, glass or plastic or paper into a bin out by the Philadelphia street,
uh-huh.
They pick it up. They've got it all together now. We put it all in the same blue bin.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that goes into then
yeah.
sorting that or then shipping that or just picking that up.
Is it good? All right. Recycling is good, but it's not as good as people think it is. And for decades, I think most people who really have studied it and who really are in the know on recycling – I've always said, listen, this isn't the panacea that everyone is hoping for. And industry has for decades been pushing recycling on everyone. And, you know, I think one of the big problems with recycling is it gives us this false hope, this sense of, hey, we're doing something good for the – I can take these plastic things because I'm just going to put it in the recycling bin.
I
can use these products because I'm just going to put it in the recycling bin. And it's going to get put into a new – item and the planet's going to be great and, you know, it's going to save the polar bears and, you know, the world is not that easy.
The key is to when going to the counter and they say, oh, well, here's your plastic bag to carry your one item home
yeah.
is to say, no, I don't need a bag.
Right.
You know, I can carry the one item to my car. I don't need a bag
yeah.
to carry it. Or say, no straw. You know, I don't need a straw.
Exactly. So we are the Clean Air Council is working with a number of municipalities right now, and I think I'm not sure exactly when this will come out, but I'm hoping that by the time people listen to this, there will be a bill introduced in Philadelphia that will ban plastic bags. We're looking at the very near future.
Nice.
Some cities
have done this.
So over 450 yeah. municipalities throughout the United States have done this. Four states, so Hawaii, by default, Hawaii has five counties. Four of the five counties, the fifth one's not
inhabited.
Not inhabited, yeah.
Right.
Is uninhabited. And
yes.
So Hawaii has a statewide ban. California has a statewide ban. New York has a statewide ban. Delaware just passed a statewide ban
nice.
Through the Senate and the House, and the governor is expected to sign that imminently. So I believe Delaware, we will see, be the fourth state to ban plastic bags. And Philadelphia will be, in the very near future, putting a ban on plastic bags. There will be some exemptions to that
mm-hmm.
to allow for, like, unwrapped meals, unwrapped food to have a, you know, like a produce bag or something like that put over it. And then there will be a 15-cent fee for all other bags. So you will not be able to get, when you go up, like you mentioned, you walk up to the counter at Wawa with a pack of gum, and they by default throw it into a plastic bag, and sometimes even two, because they've prepackaged the plastic with another plastic bag, which
right.
absolutely boggles my mind. So that the days of that are, we're seeing the end of those days. And I do think we had Are you familiar with preemption laws?
No.
Okay, so preemption laws are laws that the state will pass. So Harrisburg will take an issue and say that Philadelphia or another municipality is not allowed to act on that issue. So preemption laws take away the ability of a smaller municipality from acting on a specific issue by passing legislation on it. So Harrisburg right now, there's a representative in Harrisburg that has introduced a bill that would preempt Philadelphia from having the soda tax, the sweetened beverage tax. And in that bill before, there was this real hidden and sneaky language. ALEC, do you know American Legislative Exchange Council?
I don't.
Okay, so the ALEC, oh gosh, we could have an hour-long podcast on ALEC also. We should at some point. It's really interesting. ALEC is this very secretive, top-level, highly paid group of lobbyists, and they get together and write legislation that's just pure evil. When you look at it, you're like, did a superhero, like did a villain come up with this language? So ALEC writes all of these really evil pieces of legislation. They give them to states to implement. So a lot of the anti-choice legislation comes from ALEC. A lot of the preemption language comes from ALEC. The redistricting type stuff comes from ALEC. And companies like, you know, some of the largest companies in the world contribute money to ALEC. So ALEC is I think, one of we all say, you know, the Koch brothers and things like that. Like, ALEC is all of those bad things rolled into one. So it's an interesting and real in my opinion, obviously, a very negative part of our system is that things like that are allowed to happen. So, but that was a bit of a tangent. So ALEC creates language that says, hey, Pennsylvania passed this legislation that would take away the ability of Philadelphia to put a sweetened beverage tax on there. And by the way, we're going to sneak in language that takes away the ability for anyone to do any sort of legislation on anything that a soda is carried or transported in. So they snuck in this language that you can't make any legislation to tax sugar at the distributor's level, and you also can't do anything with any of the bags or the boxes or anything that you carry the soda from the store from. So that was essentially a preemption on plastic bags, on paper bags, on anything. So that was in the last bill. It was not included in this bill, and we don't necessarily know why it wasn't, but that is one thing that we're trying to figure out now.
Okay, so recycling,
oh yeah,
basically a good thing.
Yeah.
We won't touch any more on that, but I did want to bring in corn-based products.
Okay.
If you know anything about corn-based products,
yeah.
Years ago already when they were building the new, at that time, football stadium, I went to a conference, and the guy that was head of the football stadium here in the Eagle Stadium here in Philadelphia said that he did not want to add, you know, more pollution by having the stadium here in Philadelphia, that he would try anything he could to lessen the amount of greenhouse gases and so forth. You know, there's solar panels all along the stadium, and he brought in these corn-based cups, and it looks exactly like a plastic cup that you would, you know, hold a soft drink in or a beer.
Uh-huh.
And corn-based cups. You know anything about this, or corn-based flat, you know, plasticware?
Right.
You mentioned, you know, getting a fork or a spoon from a food cart.
So compostable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many people believe. And I guess, you know, when I see compostable products, it takes me back when we first started to see organic on labeling for food. I don't know if you remember, like maybe 15 years ago, it started to become really popular.
Certified organic.
Yeah, all those things. And in the beginning, a lot of people said, is this really worth the extra money? And I always said, you know, hey, it's like buying the renewable energy. You're still getting that mix of regular energy, but you're voting with your dollars.
Right.
So by buying these products, I do wholly support, not necessarily using corn, actually, and that's another issue I'll get back to. But there are products that can be made, so like seaweed and some other products that can be turned into products that we can use that are compostable. But the big problem with compostable, and I do support it, so I do want to say that, you know, I flat out support buying compostable products. I guess I should caveat that and say I support buying reusable products first. So if you have the ability, I know a football stadium might not have the ability to give everyone a glass instead of
maybe plastic. In Germany, but not here.
Yeah. Actually, a friend of mine, I'm not going to plug her or company, but a good friend of mine has got a really cool concept where it's a cup and you scan it. You get the cup and you pay a deposit for it and you scan it and you get kind of points every time you use it. So it's an interactive nice. Type cup. And if you leave it somewhere, the person can take it and scan it and you know where it is. So you can go get it. So it's a cool idea. She did it because she was sick. She's a sommelier, which is a wine expert. Yeah. Connoisseur. Mm-hmm. And so she did so many events and was just so petrified and of using plastic and all these things. So she was like, hey, I want to do something for the planet. And this was her idea, which is great. And that gets me to my point is that buying compostable products, while is good and admirable and we should encourage it, we don't have a composting system in Philadelphia. So whenever I go and I see these products, they're going right into the landfill. They're going right into the same trash cans as your plastic and all of those things. So they're not breaking down. They're not doing any of the positive things. So using corn, which is a food source for something that's going to go right into the landfill, is probably not any better than using any other products at this point. So once we get a composting system, and Philadelphia is working on a composting system, there is a plan to start with some very local, I just signed up 2 days ago to be my neighborhood's composting center.
Nice.
So yeah, so my neighbors will bring their compost to me, I'll put it in bins, work it, and then give them dirt back. So it will reduce probably, I think estimates are like 30 to 40% of your trash is made up of organic materials. I might be slightly wrong on that. Carson's like, let me get on my phone and check this. But I think Philadelphia's waste is made maybe between 20 and 40% of organic materials, which could be diverted from landfills and going to. So if we had a good composting system in Philadelphia, like San Fran or some other municipalities, I think without a doubt, buying compostable products is a win-win. Now it's just maybe a win-lose.
Okay. All right. I live in Fairmount, and I see every once in a while on doorsteps, again, walking to my car to get to work.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
There are white plastic buckets that have.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
No, white plastic buckets where composting is fun, and they're – someone has put some compost from their sink or their, you know, making their meals into this white bucket, put it out on the stoop, and there is somebody that comes by with a bicycle or with a trailer or something that picks up these buckets. And where do these go? How is that working? I've only seen the buckets. I haven't heard the story.
The whole story. Yeah. So Tim Bennett is one of the more well-known people in Philadelphia. Okay. You probably saw
Bennett on the side.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tim is a friend of mine, and I've known him for a number of years now. He started this kind of as a passion project. I don't know if he necessarily expected to turn it into such a big business, but it's become a pretty big business. They have an industrial-sized type composting facility, and they take very large amounts of organic material, can turn them, break them down, expose them to elements, and create really high valued material from that compost. So they take them to their facility, they run it through the whole, so there's different stages of breaking down the compost, and they have all those different stages there, and they control for the smell and the odors from breaking it down.
That comes back to then the person that set it out, or is it just set out so that he can do it, and then it goes somewhere else to be used as dirt for vegetables and fruits or
Yeah, I think that they sell it, and I think that they give a percentage of it back to the people that contribute the organic material.
Okay.
So it's a service that you pay for them to come and pick it up. Like you said, they pick it up in on their bikes, in a cart, or in a van or something like that, and they take it. Composting's great. It is the future. I think in 15 or 20 years, we will see a different way of living than we're living now. I think one of the most frustrating things for me is just the huge inefficiencies that we've allowed ourselves to fall trap to. And we have become accustomed to living certain ways that just don't seem to make sense. I mean, not even from a sustainability point of view, but just from a general, like sitting in your vehicle with the car running. Who ever thought that we as a society would literally sit there and burn our money away to the tune of billions of dollars a year? You know, it just is absurd. So, I mean, one of the reasons is we've been subsidizing oil for decades. We've been, you know, the country has been subsidizing bad behavior for many, many generations now. And we've just kind of become accustomed to it. When my grandmother, she was a big part of my rearing, and she always taught me. She grew up during the Depression. She wouldn't waste a thing. She would take the Ziploc bag, rinse it out, and hang it up on the sink,
so it
and dry it and use it. She used that until there were holes in it.
Then it was to hold clothespins or something that didn't need to
need
to be waterproof.
Yeah. So I think we've just become accustomed. We've become this throwaway society that it just. If an alien came down and looked at us, they'd be like, "What the heck are you guys doing? You know, you're putting all this crap into the ground that you live in and that you get all your nutrients from. It doesn't make sense." You know, we've got China, I think, has 90% of their waterway that's polluted. Their air is almost unbreathable. So I think that we are going to see a real large transformation in the way that we live, the way that we commute, the way that we do our daily transactions, you know, and I think, and I'm hoping.
And we're starting to see some of it.
Yeah, we are. I think that, and I don't know if you saw, there was a IPCC estimate that said that we are basically hosed by 2030. We've got about 12 years to get our act together. And they came out with this in 2018. You know, the forecasts are dire, and we need to start to realize that we are on this planet. We need the planet for nourishment and for sustainability and for life and all of these things. And we're just trashing it. And it doesn't make economic sense. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So I'm hoping that we can change quickly. And I think pieces of legislation, the nice thing about doing like a bag law or anti-idling law or something like that is it goes to the point of education. You know, the odds are you might not get a ticket for idling, but if you just know that something is disallowed and illegal in a certain municipality,
right.
It just makes you ask yourself, why is idling illegal? Well, because it's bad. Well, you know why? And then you go down that discussion pathway of why things are bad. Why are plastic bags banned? Well, because X, Y, and Z reasons,
right.
You know, so.
Right. Okay, Logan, we're going to wrap this up, but before we go, is there any sort of tip that you could give people that they could do on a daily basis that would help out, you know, aside from the idling while they're checking their phone, you know, aside from not taking some plastic bags? Any other tip we haven't touched on?
Yeah, so I think... I got into the habit a long time ago of taking my own bag to the grocery store. And then I would go to a restaurant, and if I had leftover food, I would get the container and I'd try and not take the bag. But often they would just put it in it anyway, and I knew they would just throw it out. Sometimes they would throw the utensils in. So I started to get into the habit of taking my own Tupperware or glass containers or whatever everywhere I go.
We've done the same thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it has become so. Last night I went out with a friend of mine, and we went to this really beautiful outdoor garden. They were going to have tamales and ice cream, and You know, they had music. So I brought cups for the ice cream. I brought containers that we could put the tamales in. I brought utensils and napkins. We had zero waste. So, and we brought them all in our, you know, reusable bag. And it's a nice feeling to be able to use your own utensils, use your own cloth napkin, bring your own container. So you take your container. So when I call to get takeout, I call the restaurant and I'll say, hey, I want to order this. I'll be there in about 5 to 10 minutes. Don't package it. I'm going to bring my own container. What? What do you mean you're going to bring your own container? Yeah. No, trust me. I'll be there. Don't package it. I'm going to bring my own container. So we, you know, after about a minute or two, if it's a new restaurant, if it's an old, if it's one that I've used, they know. They're like, oh, I know. I remember you. Yeah.
This is Logan.
Yep. So they know. I bring my container in. I give it to them. They take it back into the kitchen, and they bring me my food in my own container back. I take it home. I eat it. Or, you know, if I've got leftovers, I just throw it in the fridge, bring it out, rinse it right out. And actually, here's another trick. A friend of mine taught me, if you have a dog, maybe this isn't for everyone, but you just put all your plates and all your containers on the ground, you let your dog clean it, and then you throw it in the dishwasher. So they get all the grease off of it. Carson is cringing. You can't see her. She's off camera, but she is cringing right now. Some people, you know, it's not for everyone, but we have the easy opportunity to live a much less, a life that doesn't impact the earth as much as we do. So taking your own
being creative, you're being creative about it.
Be creative, carry a hanky with you. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be that all, usually men, but women too, I guess, what, 50s, 60s would always carry handkerchiefs with them. I carry a handkerchief with me. Oh, what? I don't know. Do I have it? No, it's in my shorts, actually.
I think I have one in my pocket.
You do?
Right now.
All right, yes. So I carry.
The particulate matter that comes off of a Kleenex gets in your nose, and I think it causes you to have to blow your nose even more.
It does,
than if you had a handkerchief.
So I always tell, whenever my coworkers grab a Kleenex or a towel from the, one of those bleached, single use towels. The chemicals that are on those towels are so bad for you. I stopped years ago. If I don't have a towel or something and I've washed my hands, I just take my hands and rub them on my pants for 2 seconds and dry them. And, you just made me think of one thing. And I was thinking of it when we were coming over here that I wanted to say. I recently heard one of the highest sources of VOCs in the world is body deodorant, perfume, things like that, that is contributing the most to VOCs. So maybe one thing that you could do would be to use things that have less chemicals, less more natural products in them. So I think, take your own containers, don't take your own bags, obviously, don't use straws, and use less, use fragrances that have less natural elements to them. So
good. Yeah. I'm William Lehan, and I'm with Logan Weldy, and this is a filler cast. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.